Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Prep Life Podcast. This is your founder and CEO of Glam Girl Bikini, Amy Enger, and today with my fabulous co-host.
Hey, guys. This is Chris Nicole, Glam Girl Bikini Coach and IFBB Bikini Pro.
So today we're going to be talking about improvement season. For everybody, that looks different than the prep, the lean out phase. It looks completely different. And we're going to talk to you about some of the things that are important to focus on during the improvement season that will help you to become better when it comes time to diet again. So, Chris, let's start with just a little bit of a life update in terms of some data that you have collected. So before your show, you had collected some data on a DEXA scan, which you had never done before, correct?
Correct. Yeah, it was my first time doing a DEXA scan. It was 2 weeks before my pro show in September last year. And I was very curious to see like where my body was landing closer to a show date as far as body composition, so that we could use that as a measurement tool in comparison for future shows. So I went and got my DEXA, which is just like, it's almost like it is an x-ray. It's an x-ray of your entire body. So you lay down on this table and there's like an arm that slowly moves over top of you and it will scan you from head to toe. And it will measure not only your bone density, but it will also measure, you know, fat distribution and pounds and lean body mass. And the place that I went to, they actually gave me a chart where it broke down everything from my trunk to my hips to my legs as far as my body fat and muscle distribution. And then when I went back in January this year, they were able to compare my most recent scan with my past scan. And it was super encouraging because I think when you are in the improvement season, your parameters for seeing progress are very different. You're not watching the scale decrease and watching the inches constantly move. Things are very, they're a little bit clouded as far as measuring progress with those tools. So having the DEXA was very encouraging. I found out that with my weight increase, I had put on about 4 pounds of body fat. And then I had increased my muscle tissue around 6 pounds. So, I've been working really hard in the gym. So it was nice to see that that hard work was paying off and that my body was progressing with a really good body composition. So I also was able to see my body fat was 16%, around 16% when I stepped on stage. And in my improvement season, it's gone up about 2 to 3%. So I kind of know where my body's sitting. I kind of know where we need to aim next time I get up on stage to improve upon my package. So I know you've gotten DEXAs before, Amy.
Yeah, I try to get one. So I always do it when I'm about to start a cut because I just want to see where my body's starting point is. And then I get one like the week before my show. And I just want to kind of see like how that dieting phase affected. So I kind of do the opposite of what you just did. So you did it like your baseline was like right before your show. And now you're like, you know, 4 months later. And I kind of do them every 6 months. So they are not the most cost effective type of test. If you're considering it, they are very expensive. But in my opinion, they're one of the most accurate measurements in terms of body fat composition. I like how they, like you said, measure how much muscle is in each body part so you can kind of see your imbalances. And the fat mass, like it shows in a red color, and then your lean tissues show in green. So you can kind of even see where, numbers-wise, like how much fat you have in each leg. And it's really broken down really well. So I like that for like the long term. And then I have the convenience of living in the glam lab. So I do the Fit 3D scan every week. And that one is the best for taking accurate, like, tape measurements of your
Yes.
body. It does give you a body fat percentage, but it's based like on an equation and by electrical impedance. And the good thing about that is that I can keep my variables very consistent because I can, come down here first thing in the morning before exercise, before food, water, and I can get that scan. And I know that all of my variables are very consistent with like time of day and stuff like that. So by electrical impedance, body fat tools aren't as accurate, but they say that they base the Fit 3D data off of, like, they take every population, like every height, gender, weight, and they take the averages of DEXA scans from data that they have, and that's how they formulate the calculations. So, I mean, that one is very beneficial in the fact that it gives you a 3D scan of your body, so you can kind of see like how your symmetry is laying and things like that. And you can
Yeah.
see the progression in your inches. So I know that several clients, like for example, I have a client in Alaska, a client in Mississippi, they do the Fit 3D scan. They've one of them has done it here, but then it can also transfer, at any place in the country that has a Fit 3D scan. So I can kind of see their progress. And those hard gainers, this is our best measurement tool because their weight and their inches aren't going to change a ton, but we can at least see, in a very cost-effective way. Because most scans are like Fit 3D scans. Some places they charge like $10 or $20. It's not very expensive. So, and there's no radiation exposure like there is with DEXA. So we can see their, as long as they're keeping their time of day that they're measuring consistent, like we can kind of see like where they're, gaining muscle and kind of recomping, especially in an improvement season. That's so important to track those pieces of the puzzle because, like you said, you could stress like that you gained 10 pounds, but 6 of that was muscle. So that's really awesome,
Yeah.
So.
I do really like with a 3D Fit scan the three-dimensional image that they show too, because that's really nice to be able to compare. Like you can your circumference for your hips can increase, but seeing like how you reshaped your glutes, like I've seen some of the, like how your or like the size of your shoulders in comparison to your waist. Like it gives you a very good visual. So I like that a lot about the 3D Fit scan.
Yeah, and it also gives you a postural report, which has been really extremely helpful for a lot of my clients. Some of them that, they come out of here and they get a chiropractic adjustment because they notice from the scan that they're really out of alignment, or maybe they have like one glute that's way more developed than the other. And it even shows like how much weight you put in your feet, the percent. So it's pretty interesting. I think there's a lot to be said for that machine being really great, just like the DEXA for physique competitors, as opposed to just like, your basic everyday, like handheld by electrical impedance. I mean, InBody's okay too. It's another cost-effective way of getting a body fat percentage, but these kind of give those extras, like where you actually have a visual of the human body. And then DEXA also shows like bone density, which is super important too. So speaking of chiropractors, I know because I'm your coach that you've recently seen one. I wanted to talk about some of the stuff that is important to kind of focus on in the improvement season in terms of, I know you've also experienced cupping, and I don't know how many of our listeners have done that or have heard of that, but I wanted you to share your experience with that and any kind of recovery methods that you're really trying to focus on this improvement season.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it's really important, especially in an improvement season, to make it a priority for recovery. I would be the first to admit that that's been something that I haven't been as diligent with as far as like taking care of myself. I'm very good at executing like diet and exercise, but recovery and stretching has been, the past couple of years has not been a priority. So I actually have to make appointments with myself to make sure that those things get done. Yes, exactly. Yep. So setting aside, like Amy put yoga on my plan. So I know that on my rest days, I'm supposed to be doing, you know, restorative yoga, stretching. So having that in front of me in a program, implemented in a program, will make me execute it better. So I've been doing some like small, short, like yoga sessions at home just to get my body like stretching. But I do really well also with making appointments with other professionals. Like Amy had mentioned, I went to a chiropractor the other day who I've been to several, but I was very appreciative of this professional because he was able to really pinpoint where my imbalances are. It wasn't just like a quick adjustment of my back, but he knew like I've been having a little bit of trouble with my left shoulder and my left trap. And I'm trying to grow these muscles. And if I have mobility issues where, you know, I have other muscles that are not synergistically working in conjunction with my delts, but they're maybe working against it, or I'm feeling super sore in my neck after a shoulder day, I know that my muscles aren't firing properly. So he was really great, gave me like a plan of care, did some like mobility exercises with me, and gave me homework to do some stretching. So again, my obliger personality has an accountability guy now, and that has been really helpful. I think especially with my scoliosis, it's really important for me to make sure that I'm seeing a professional who understands my body and what, and he also understands athletes as well too, which I think is like a gem. Like that's a gold star all around, somebody who understands those aspects. And then he also actually recommended getting massage therapy on a regular basis. And I have been utilizing a massage therapist as well. I try and go every 4 weeks. I could probably stand to go every 2 weeks with how bad I beat my body up in the gym. But we recently did some cupping as well too, which it's those silicone, obviously, cups that get put on the skin, and the suction is implemented to help pull toxins out of the muscle tissue, whereas massage is pushing toxins out. Cupping is the pulling method. And so it's supposed to just be used in conjunction with massage to help detox the muscle for reparative purposes as well too. And it does leave those like bruising marks, almost look like an octopus attacked you. you have those suction marks, but they don't stay for long. And usually they're good indicators of where you may have more toxicity or more tightness in your body as well. So they can be good regulators for making sure you're doing some restorative work on your own in between those sessions. So that's been my recent experience with taking care of my body. Amy, what have you been implementing as far as professionals and taking care of stretching and mobility for you as well?
Yeah, so I, even in a lean out phase, just because like you said, we do beat our bodies up so much, I get deep tissue massage once a week. That's just like my 1 hour per week that I take for myself. And she doesn't do cupping when I'm in season, because it does like leave, like you said, like a bruise or a circle. But she has started implementing. So there's two different kinds of cupping. I want to say some people might have had the glass hot cupping. I've never experienced that, so I can't speak on that. I've also just had the silicone suction cupping. And I've had that on my trap and my IT band. And I've just noticed that by the, it's almost like it starts to relax once it it gets pulled so hard. It's almost like it stretches it like beyond what it needs to be. And then it allows that my muscles to kind of relax because they get overworked. And then the biggest thing that I've implemented recently is Sandy told me that my feedback was that I need to grow my upper body. And so I know that especially after interviewing Lauren Dana Miller, and she was talking about how she needed to grow her upper body and how she went to a physical therapist to get rid of her impingement. I was just thinking about like how much impingement I had in my shoulder, in my right shoulder, mm-hmm. probably from playing college softball for years. And you know, the wear and tear on that shoulder has caused especially my right trap to just be extremely overactive. And I have a hard time engaging my deltoids. So I have tried this new technique. A physical therapist introduced me to it. It's called muscle activation therapy. And basically what happens is they test, all of the surrounding muscles, like of my shoulder basically. And he kind of makes sure he tests them all to see if they're like activating and turning on. And if they're not, it's really painful, but he, kind of like gives you like a deep tissue massage, like to kind of turn on those muscles. And then he gives me exercises to, he pinpoints what muscles are weak that I need to work on so that, my trap isn't getting overworked and my deltoids can engage when I actually need them to. So some interesting things that came out of this is, so for years, I've always been taught as a bikini competitor that I don't really need to train chest. Well, mm-hmm. Lo and behold, you know, he pointed out that my pecs and my serratus are very, very weak. And you need an antagonist and a protagonist. You need, so for example, when you're flexing your bicep, you know, when you're contracting or when you're lengthening that muscle, then your tricep works. There's always like an opposite, you know, push pull. Mm-hmm. So chest, you're pushing, and then pulling, you know, you can be working your back. So basically what it comes down to, long story short, is if you have really inactive muscle groups and very weak muscle groups, and some muscle groups are overly developed, that balance and or that imbalance starts to cause either the impingement or it causes trouble, like you said, in your shoulder stability. So another thing that got pointed out was that, so this is something very new that I've stopped doing, is I used to train in my waist trainer. I would mm-hmm. wear that underneath my belt. Well, I've stopped doing that because the exact point where my waist trainer hits, think about this, like your spine, if you think of it as like a tent, and you need all the stakes in place. So you've got like the front of your abdomen, your obliques, the sides of your body, and then the muscles on either side of your back. All stakes need to be in place to have that spine stability. Well, when we wear the shaper all of the time, it atrophies not only the obliques, but all of the muscles mm-hmm. surrounding. So another thing that we found out was that my low lat insertions and my low trap insertions were very weak because they had gotten atrophied from my waist trainer. So mm-hmm. I do think that waist trainers are extremely important in a lean out phase, but I think in a building phase, it's the time where you kind of need to take a break from it and allow some of those muscles to make sure that they're turned on and activated. So I do still wear a leather belt while I'm training to kind of keep my core muscles, you know, in. So they're still going to expand no matter what. Every time you pick up a weight, all of your, you know, core spine muscles are going to contract. But in this way, without wearing the shaper while I'm doing like back exercises and things like that, I'm able to fully engage all parts of my lat muscle and just overall health of my shoulder. So that was a really long-winded answer. I don't know if I like totally bored everybody with that, but.
No, I think that's great information. I'm glad you shared that because similarly, since my for several months, I've stopped wearing my waist trainer when I have lifted. I just noticed that the integrity of my spine was feeling more unstable in my midsection. And I knew if I was going to go into the gym and I was going to push heavy weights overhead, or if I was going to have to pull heavy weights for my legs, whatever, that it requires a certain degree of core stability. And I also was on this like mad mission to grow glutes. And the more that I was researching about pelvic position when you are trying to maximize glute growth through the movement, the more I was realizing that my shaper was actually pulling my pelvis into an anterior tilt, which, if you don't know what that is, it's more of like a lower arch in your low back, and it pushes your pelvis, like the top of your pelvis, forward. And even Brett Contreras talks about like the benefit of having a posterior pelvic tilt when you're doing hip thrusts, because that is where you're going to get the most benefit for building that glute max. So I stopped wearing it just so I could train my body to get into that position, and also to develop a little bit of more stability in my core. And it's been great. But I do agree with you, Amy. I do think that this is not like waist trainers are good or bad. I think when you're in a dieting phase, it is purposeful in getting your waist super small. But there's a time and a place for everything, just like your nutrition adjusts, whether you're in a dieting phase or an improvement season. Other aspects of your prep should shift as well. And so, yeah, that's been a great benefit for me, not wearing it. And I've experimented with a couple clients, and I've gotten great feedback as well, that they're able to actually activate their glutes better not wearing the waist shaper during their lifts. So again, each is an individual, and it's, you know, a time and a place for everything. But I think sometimes as like coaches and athletes, you just have to be open to experimenting with things to kind of figure out what works. And yeah, I just think that was really good insight that you shared.
Yeah. Okay. So, well, good. I'm glad to help. And then in terms of food focus, so I think that it's important that everybody understands that the amount of time you spend in a dieting phase, you need to spend the equal amount of time in an improvement season. So like if we take Chris, for example, she had dieted for 9 months. So right now she's at 4 months in a recovery phase. And that's not just your body or your hormone adaptations that we're looking to heal or bring back to normal levels. Because obviously, you know, our satiety hormones, our hunger hormones, our sex hormones, like thyroid, all of those things downregulate when we are in a dieting phase. So we have to get rid of those adaptations. Mm-hmm. We do that by, you know, slowly lowering cardio, tapering off fat burners, caffeine detoxes. We also, you know, focus more on getting calories back up to maintenance or surplus, incorporating more carbohydrates for recovery. But with all of that in mind, we have to also understand that there's also a mental piece to the recovery. So food focus is a real thing. And we both talked before this podcast, and we're both in the post show. I'm even more fresh. I'm only like 7 weeks post show. So my food focus is really high. My relationship with food, you know, I'm really struggling, and I want to be transparent about that, because if you're feeling the same way post show, not only can it be discouraging when you're seeing like your inches going up and the scale going up and things like that, but it can also be very mentally taxing to still feel like you're dieting when you're tracking and like still trying to, you know, struggle to stay on track because your hormones are working against you, but also sometimes like just mentally it's hard to do. And we were kind of having this discussion that, you know, if we want to be an elite athlete, we have to make these elite decisions. And I think it's the most challenging in the improvement season. What are your thoughts, Chris? And then do you have any recommendations for some things that might help people if they're feeling the same way?
Yeah, so I actually was really glad that Amy and I had this discussion, because I think sometimes when you are, you hide those aspects of your prep because that's not something you want to advertise. Like, you want to advertise your successes. And so when you're struggling with food, it can become a very secretive thing. And so having a good community and a coach, like, it was very helpful for me to talk with Amy about, you know, where I was struggling with relationships with food, and to know that, okay, like, there's no, and her words verbatim were, there's no one's an exception to the rule. Like, just because I'm a pro or because I'm a coach doesn't mean that I'm not human and that I'm not going to struggle. So the first thing that, like, really got me was just the amount of grace that was extended outside of, like, my title and just being a human. So I think that connecting and being open about it is the first thing. But there was a couple of tips that also I found very pertinent that could be directly applied maybe to, you know, your situation if you're struggling with it. And that's with looking at meeting your needs without food. So that's a big one for me is, you know, food is a very quick, it gives you a very quick response. It's very accessible. You grab something you really enjoy, you eat it, and then you get a really good hormone response. You feel great. But if you're supplementing other needs with food, that's where it can become like a very unhealthy habit. And so making sure that you are, number one, getting enough rest, I think, is a really big one. I think our willpower decreases the more tired we are. And so making sure that you're taking care of your body and getting rest is important. Getting sensual pleasure. So, like how we talked about, making sure that you are taken care of in multiple aspects. You know, getting a massage is a really good way to just take care of yourself in another aspect. Expressing your feelings, which that was big for me. Like, I needed to be open with Amy and talk to her about, like, what was going on. So having, you know, like, a good accountability partner or coach to be able to share with is great. If you have a need of being heard or understood and accepted, I think that's another big one that takes some self-evaluation and knowing if you're supplementing it with food. Being intellectually and creatively stimulated. So if we're bored or we're not playing to that aspect of our personality, we can supplement with food as well too. And receiving, like, comfort and warmth. I think sometimes that's the biggest one. People say comfort foods. And so I think, number one, identifying whatever it is that you're needing in that moment, and then seeing how you can supplement it with something different outside of food so that you have a positive relationship with nutrition, I think is a big aspect. Yeah, that's what I have on that.
Well, and I think we would be remiss if we didn't quote what book this is coming from. I sent Chris a couple of snippets from the Intuitive Eating book, which is really, I mean, it's the gold standard when it comes to making peace with food and kind of freeing yourself from the dieting mentality. So the authors of this book are Evelyn Tribold and Elise Reich, which I will put those, I will give credit where credit's due in the show notes so that you can all kind of explore this as well. They have a lot of good takeaways. The beginning of the book kind of talks about eating tendencies or what, like, eating category you fall into. And then it just gives lots of tips about how to deal with your feelings, you know, rather than relying on food, getting away from the dieting mentality, and kind of body, kind of positive type of type of thing. So there's a couple of different lists, I think, that are good, just ways to, like, deal with your feelings, find a different distractor. I think another one is seek nurture. So I don't know. We're kind of at that 30-minute mark. Do you want to hit a couple of these high points to share with everybody?
Oh my gosh, there's just so much.
I know. I feel like we should almost do another podcast just on.
I feel like we should too
on that as well.
Stay tuned.
Yes. So as we are also talking, I sent her the disclaimer when I kind of shared this book with her. I always like to kind of like give like a little education. Like if someone's struggling, like I feel like there's certain things, like if they've helped me, like sometimes it's good to share that. And so this was a book that I read when I was in a pretty heavy binge eating time. So I'm not saying that Chris was is anywhere near that. But I think that everybody can learn something from this because we are such a like dieting culture. And especially when it comes to competitions, it's, I mean, whether we like it or not, like we are kind of going through dieting phases like throughout our prep life. So while I don't think that intuitive eating is the correct method for bodybuilders to utilize, I think there's a lot of takeaways in this book that can be helpful, that you can kind of find a healthy balance between maybe getting rid of like some of the negative dieting mentality habits or rituals or thoughts, and kind of turning those into like positive actions. So that's kind of what I have on that.
But yeah, I'm glad you shared that because I think it gets confusing. People don't know like what when they're supposed to. Are they supposed to be 100% all the time? Are they supposed to diet and not diet? And like you had said earlier, like you're absolutely right. When you are an athlete in the sport, like what you do dietarily on a regular basis is part of your training for the sport. So it is important. But I think also we talked about like coming into a dieting phase with a fresh mentality, and knowing how to navigate your improvement season with food relationships and body relationships so that you can come in nice and fresh to a dieting phase. It's all part of the learning process, part of improvement season. And I agree with Amy. I believe it's the hardest part. So don't give up.
Yeah. So not only does our body physically need to heal, remember that mental piece, there's some healing that needs to go and take place before you step back into it. Cause it's human nature for us, especially as competitors, to just be like, okay, I just want to jump into a lean out phase. Like I just want to start a prep so that I can kind of like shuffle all these feelings of like fluffiness and all of that under the rug and just go back into a dieting phase. Cause that's like kind of the easy thing to do. Like we can just shut this off, go into prep mode and be done with it. But like Chris was saying, you need to be excited about your next prep mentally, and you need to be physically ready. So both physical and mental are super important. So we'll leave you with that. And you guys let us know if you actually want to hear our next podcast, if you want it to be about food relationships. I know that we did one a long time ago, but it has been lost in space on, I think they only keep the last 2 years worth of podcasts. So
lost in space.
Yeah. So that one no longer is on iTunes or Podbean. So yeah, let us know. Tell us. You can either DM us. You can find us on Instagram at Prep Life Podcast, or you can find us at Glam Girl Bikini on IG. You can certainly DM us. You know, take a screenshot of this episode if you liked it. Give us your feedback, put it on your story, tag us. We always appreciate ratings and reviews. So we would like to know your thoughts there as well. So with that, this is your founder and CEO of Glam Girl Bikini, Amy Enger, signing off with my fabulous co-host.
And this is Chris Nicole, Glam Girl Bikini Coach and IFBB Bikini Pro. Thanks for listening, guys.